Hey, this is Russell, and I work at The Video Store, the place that we can go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to chat to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop.
Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV?
How's it?
Good morning.
How are you, my G-Force?
I'm good, Russell. How are you?
I'm okay, man. I'm strong.
Nice.
Coming off the back of a very cool weekend, which we'll talk about.
Nice.
Welcome to The Video Store. Thank you for popping in to this lovely video store here.
Yeah.
We've just opened up. My name is Russell. I am the owner of The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. And I've got this other job with my friend G-Force.
Yep.
Graham is a editor and very much the producer of this podcast. Mm. And today we're doing a shift behind
yes.
the counter, and we are going to talk about all the movies and the series that we've been enjoying. Just a quick shout out to everyone who came out to the Bioscope this past weekend.
Oh,
People say that nobody's got money in January, but we had a weekend of many of which were sold out shows.
Nice.
Which was such a great start to the year.
Mm.
I've always maintained the theory that, at least in my kind of hospitality world,
yeah.
maybe the grocery shops have a different curve, but in my sort of get out and do stuff world, I always think January and February are great months.
Oh, okay.
There always seems to be a sense of like, I want to do stuff.
Oh, right.
It's the kind of new year, new me.
Back in the swing of things.
Attitude, yeah.
Yeah.
And so we've always had good months.
Nice.
Jan has always been exciting.
Cool.
So, yeah, interesting.
Mm.
We have had a complete unknown
yes.
start here in South Africa in cinemas. So mm-hmm. I want to chat to you, Graham, about it.
Definitely.
We got together to watch it here at the Bioscope,
yeah.
which was a cool thing to watch and be in my space
yes.
for. So I want to chat about that. I've seen two very cool limited series on Netflix I
nice.
Want to chat about.
Cool.
Nice little unravelers, twists and turns, which
nice.
I want to get into.
Cool.
What do you want to chat about?
I think just a complete unknown. I think that's okay. pretty much anything on my list.
Okay, cool. We've got lots of stuff to get into. But we like to kick off with a little flash, quick sort of news segment, which we call Hey Did You Guys See?
Yes.
Do you want to start it off?
Sure. Well, I suppose we can start with one that we missed a few weeks ago.
Okay.
Hey, did you see the Superman trailer?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
It made quite a splash.
It did. And it got everyone very excited because one thing that came up, which was really unique and weird, was a lot of people had a lot to say about the color grade.
Oh, okay.
Which
it's
is
very
cool.
saturated.
Yeah, it's bright.
Yeah.
It's bright and colorful.
Yeah.
I think we've had a very dark and somber Superman for a while.
Everyone's used to the Snydery look.
Yeah. And so this looks cool.
Yeah.
What's the name of the dude who's now Superman?
Oh, David Corenswet or something like that.
That's a weird name.
It is an unusual name.
And he hasn't done an incredible amount of stuff.
No, he's not in a ton. He was in Twisters.
Hmm.
And a few other things here and there, but he's not like a... I think it's good that he's a little bit unknown.
Yeah, I think that's kind of been the attitude, right?
Mm.
And we got shown the dog.
Yes, Crypto.
Yeah. What did you think of it?
I think it looks fun. I think it looks light and breezy. And something I find interesting is people always say, like, Superman's boring because you can't, like, hurt him. You can't beat him.
Yeah.
But then, like, the opening shot of this is a Superman who's had the shit beaten out of him. I think that's like a deliberate statement of saying, okay, our Superman isn't like invulnerable and flawless.
Yeah.
He's going to get his ass handed to him a little bit.
Is this going to be an origin story? Do you know?
I don't know how much of the origin they're going to deal with. I doubt they'll do any of like the Krypton exploding stuff.
Okay.
I think they're going to like let that, because everyone knows that story. I think they want to let that sit.
What's that?
Of like Superman being sent from Krypton to Earth because Krypton was blowing up.
I didn't know it was because it was blowing up.
Yes, it's like being destroyed by capitalism, basically.
Oh, shit. It's a people have likened Superman to a lot of very interesting things, and it's taken on quite a nuanced meaning for me. The one was someone going like, "It's Jesus."
Yes,
it's the Jesus story, and I was like, "Oh, fuck!"
Especially with like from like the Chris Reeve era, Christopher Reeve's era. Yeah. Chris Reeve or Reeves? It's Reeves, right?
Christopher
No, it's Reeve.
Reeve.
It's Reeve. Yeah, especially with the Christopher Reeve era, that very much took on a lot of the like Christ-like imagery, which they borrowed in Smallville a lot. Yeah. But early on, he's much more of like a Moses figure. Okay. Like you think about him being put in like a little container and sent off to another place because his place was being destroyed. Because, I mean, Superman was created by two Jewish immigrants.
I was about to say, that's the other nuance which I've loved learning more about. Mm. And how those who've survived World War II created some of the most famous superhero characters.
Yes.
And they sort of lived out their fantasy of not being persecuted.
Yeah, because this was like the late 1930s, so this was as all of that was building up.
Wow.
You had these Jewish immigrants creating these characters for themselves.
Sure. Yeah. Interesting. Mm. Hey, did you see that Popeye and Tintin are now in the public domain?
Oh. Like completely in the public domain or only like certain
iterations? I'm not 100% sure, but I think it'll always be the sort of the iterations of that time. Because
yes.
I think the people who do hold the copyrights will try and hold on to as much of them as possible. But yeah, there's this great law that exists which opens up the intellectual rights to where you don't have to get the permission or pay to use these figures. It's a little bit like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You can only qualify after a certain period of time.
Oh, okay.
And it'll be like that album could get you in to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, not the next album.
Yes.
So the moment you qualify
with
a certain album, you sort of in the running. So yeah, it's the same as that. I guess early versions of Tintin are now available.
Okay. Get ready for the Tintin horror movie.
Yeah, I was about to say, and this was the comment that always came up in these kind of articles and things is that obviously, the moment these things open up, Steamboat Willie, the very early Mickey Mouse was available from about a year or two ago.
Yeah,
you know, immediately there was a Mickey Mouse horror and a Winnie the Pooh horror movie,
and
the comments were like, "Yeah, there will be those, but those aren't going to shift the dial."
No,
you know, a small sect of people are going to find it comical, but
the
rest of the world can move on.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. Popeye.
Definitely.
Yeah, and I loved Tintin.
Yes, that Spielberg Tintin movie was incredible.
See, I never watched that.
Ooh, it's good.
I don't know whether I was just in the wrong place and time when it came out, but I really loved Tintin as a kid. Mm. It was between sort of Tintin and Asterix and Obelix.
Oh, yes.
And I thought Tintin was, what appealed to me was the smarts of it.
Okay.
You know, where it wasn't a silly comic.
Yes.
And it wasn't comical and farcical. It was, sure, there were some one or two sort of quirky characters, but you were traveling the world and you were going to these exotic places and, you know, it was, there was a smartness to
it. Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a really great documentary on YouTube. There's a channel called Breadsword that I've spoken about a few times. They did a video, I think it's called Tintin in the Shadow of Giants or something like that.
A sword made out of bread. Bread sword.
It's just called Bread Sword. That's the name of the channel.
I mean, that's the spelling.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly like that. But this dude did it's like almost 2 hours long. It's a really in-depth, it's mostly like dealing with the movie as an like adaptation of Tintin. And then it gets into like, you know, like Hergé and all his, and like his history and everything and like how he informed that character and everything. It's so good.
Okay.
So interesting to like learn about the history of that.
Okay, we'll put a link.
Yeah, I'll throw a link down there. Hey, did you see the trailer for Death of a Unicorn?
I did.
It looks really fun.
It looks really interesting. Jenna Ortega's
really cool.
in it.
Yeah, and Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd.
Yes.
And they literally kill a unicorn.
Yeah, so I think the story is he's going to his billionaire's boss for like a retreat, like they're doing like a work retreat sort of thing. So he's going to like his very wealthy boss's house.
Mm-hmm.
And on this property on the way there, they accidentally run over a unicorn, like an actual unicorn, which they initially try to hide, but then they can't. But then it turns into like a horror comedy.
Yes.
But the whole thing is like the billionaires immediately go, oh, how can we exploit this thing and like use the unicorn to our own gains?
It's not as if the billionaire made the unicorn.
No, I don't think so. I think it seems like they're going, oh, how can, like, what can we get out of this thing to make more money?
Oh, wild.
And that's what they're, it looks very fun.
Yeah, it looks super cool.
It's an A24 movie. So.
Yeah, so it's a bit arty and weird, which is nice. Hey, did you see a new season of Black Mirror is coming?
Ah, that's not surprising.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is nice. I enjoy Black Mirror.
I still haven't seen any of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. You're in for a treat. Well, I don't know whether it's a treat you enjoy.
Right.
Over on Netflix, it's an anthology series, for those who don't know. It's all, so obviously each episode is basically a film in itself.
Yeah.
Sort of a 40-minute or hour-long episode, and remarkably different from the next.
Mm.
So they are fucking haunting, but in a really, like, I think an amazing way.
Okay.
I took great joy in watching all of them.
Nice.
Some of them are, like, very harrowing.
Right.
Very weird, very odd. But they tap into an anxiety that we all have.
Okay.
Now. In the modern
anxiety
era.
Of the future.
Yeah, because it's all set in this sort of near future where these things are coming. It's not, some of them are far-fetched in the far future, but they're all, a lot of them are all very, very close to home.
Okay.
So yeah, that should be good.
Nice. That's cool. Hey, did you see, we now finally know what Chris Nolan's next movie is going to be.
Sure, yeah.
After a lot of very weird speculation and a lot of rumors.
This is funny to see that because it's my one bubble. I've got a few Instagram accounts that I obviously look after and manage. And of course, the video store's Instagram, it's just filled with film people.
Yeah.
And so every single post as I was scrolling was like, it's the Odyssey.
Yeah.
Christopher Nolan's going to do the Odyssey.
Yes.
So yeah.
Yeah. Because I think it's very, did you ever hear the rumor about like the helicopter cops movie?
No.
This was one of the rumors. And people actually think that like, the studio actually put it out to misdirect people.
Okay.
But apparently, like, it was going to be some movie about, like, inspired, I don't know if you know Blue Thunder. It was an 80s movie, which then inspired Airwolf. So it was about, like, an advanced helicopter thing. And they were, like, there was even paperwork from, like, pilots, like, stunt pilots and stuff, saying that they were, like, filming stuff and this is when this was scheduled. It's wild.
It's interesting that we're at the point now where Christopher Nolan is so celebrated.
Yes.
And every film that he's done has been so successful and loved that the world is watching about his next move. I don't think there's other directors that have this much attention
on
their next move.
Yeah, they're very few. Maybe Quentin Tarantino.
Sure. No, and so we're talking like two, maybe three individuals in the whole world. Where the world is like giving a shit about their choices.
Exactly.
Where everyone else is like, surprise, I'm doing this.
Yeah. But it's the Odyssey. We now know he's doing the Odyssey. Or at least a portion of the Odyssey. It definitely won't be the whole thing. Because the Odyssey is way too big to turn into a movie.
It's considered like one of the first stories ever written, right?
It is like very early literature,
And it was the basis of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yes.
The Coen Brothers film. Speaking of classic films, this is when we were talking about Luca Guadagnino in the most rented episode, I was under the impression that there was this other film that he had in the works.
Yes,
and so I went over and was busy scrolling while you guys were talking, and I noticed something, which I don't even think is necessarily a public announced thing. Is that in IMDb, it tells you where the filmmakers are in terms of like what's in production or what's in development, which is even further away.
Yeah.
And in the list of what's in development for Luca Guadagnino was Lord of the Flies.
Oh.
And I was going to raise it, but then I was like, okay, this is too much of a tangent.
That's
the most rented episode had enough tangents.
Yeah.
But for those who've been following my little personal quest.
Yeah.
I have been trying now in my late 30s, going into 40 this year, to read all the books one sort of should read.
Yes.
These classic texts.
Yeah.
So I've done Dune, and I did that before part two came out.
Cool.
I read Streetcar Named Desire, Animal Farm, a whole bunch of these books that you sort of should have read.
Yeah.
Many people did them as set works.
Yeah.
This December, I read Lord of the Flies.
It's so good, dude.
It is amazing.
I think it's an incredible book.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
And it's just this weird little stroke of coincidence.
Yeah.
That I then saw that it's in development. So
that's nice.
My little one is, hey, did you see? Luca Guadagnino
yeah.
is going to do Well, hopefully it's going to happen.
Well, on a related note, how did you see Bret Easton Ellis?
Yes.
Who's the author of American Psycho.
Yeah.
Said that this thing about an American Psycho remake isn't true.
Interesting.
He's like, no, none of these people actually have like Luca Guadagnino and Austin Butler and whoever's supposed to be writing it. None of these people actually signed on to it. That's what he said on his podcast.
Interesting.
And everybody's like, is he just very ill-informed, or does he know stuff that we don't know, or are all these rumors fake? Like, I just think that's really bizarre.
Because we've spoken about it before, because it seems like from credible sources, there was going to be a new take on American Psycho, the very famous book by this gentleman.
Mm.
Okay.
But so it's not like anyone else has denied it. Like, Austin Butler there's been no statement from him being like, no, I haven't signed on to this. Or Luca Guadagnino, none of them are saying, no, like, we've seen all these rumors and they're not true.
Yeah.
So why does the author think that it's not true, but they're not saying anything?
There was a good weekend where there was talk of a Goonies remake, and then it got very quickly squashed.
Okay.
Because it was like, Spielberg eventually was like, no, man, shush, man, this is bullshit. And it sort of, it died after a weekend.
Yes.
Okay, so that might not happen. Have you got more? I don't have many more.
I have a couple more. Mm-hmm. Hey, you see, James Wan is doing a Ninja Turtles movie.
Okay.
Which is interesting.
Remind me of his work.
James Wan has mostly done horror stuff. So he's done like The Conjuring and Saw. But apparently it's based on a specific story from the Ninja Turtles comic books called The Last Ronin, where all but one of the Ninja Turtles is dead. And there's only one left, and he's now out on a revenge story.
Okay. I wonder who that one will be.
Well, if you know the comic book, you'll know who it is. But it's kind of like, it's like a reveal. They hid it for like a while, and then it was revealed, oh, it's him. It's that one. This is interesting. How did you see, a while back, Ridley Scott was going to make Dune.
Okay.
And a script for this movie has been uncovered. Apparently it was lost for a while.
Okay.
And now a draft of the script has been found.
Okay.
I don't know if it's been put online yet, but there's a whole, I was reading like a whole like write-up about it, so I'll post it there. It sounds interesting. Like,
okay.
I also think Ridley Scott would actually be a good choice for Dune.
Why do you say that?
Just his sensibilities and like the way he treats sci-fi. Okay. If you look at the way he treats sci-fi and like Prometheus and that sort of thing, I think Dune like, and then like, because Dune is like that cross-section of like big epic history sort of thing. Mm. It feels historical.
Yeah, the way in which Gladiator was that.
Exactly. The way he handles history and the way he handles sci-fi, I think he would have been like an interesting choice.
Okay.
But that fell apart. It had to do with where they were planning to shoot it. Apparently they were going to shoot it in Mexico, and he went to the studio, and the studio was like, there'd been a flood and it had been wrecked, and he was like, look, we can't do this here. And the executive was like, no, we're making this here. And he was like, okay, bye. And then it became a David Lynch movie.
Oh, so it was ahead of Lynch.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, ahead of that version.
Yes, which is bizarre. Okay, this is just a little anecdotal one. Hey, did you see that Andor, you know, the Star Wars series Andor, some like report about it was made. It cost, this is for both seasons, but even so, Andor cost $645 million.
Wild.
That is insane.
Yeah.
That is unbelievably expensive.
But it's wild how that kind of money gets spent for a product that doesn't literally make
money. Yes, that's what I was saying. There's no way the show made money, but they're still making it.
No, but it just shows you how much money they make from Disney Plus.
It's wild.
I give them 100 rons a month.
Yes. How long would it take for your single subscription to pay for Andor?
Yeah. Wow. There's no, it just shows you how, and they've got that, they're paying that from the pot.
Yes.
You know?
It's wild to me. Like $645 million.
Yeah.
That is unbelievable.
No, that's insane.
Okay, let's do one other one quickly. We were talking, we almost spoke about it in the coffee shop, and then you said save it.
Oh, yeah.
It's that apparently Netflix executives have told writers who write for Netflix show that characters need to describe what they're doing more. So that people who are watching Netflix as like a second screen experience know what's happening.
Yeah, oh, shit.
So the characters need to like say what they're doing.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
Yeah.
What a horrible idea.
Yeah. No, that just takes art out the back door and shoots it in the back of the head.
Like, what are you doing, Netflix?
But my Lord. I mean, listen, maybe for certain popcorn-y, you know, reality TV or something. But
For that I could understand. But for like narrative stuff.
Oh, God.
Could you imagine?
But it's weird, eh? It just shows you what a weird position we're in now.
Right.
You know, where also something like Spotify, for example, was exposed for creating their own music, which they seed into playlists.
Right.
Like popular playlists, like in amongst other songs.
Okay.
And they're these kind of fake artists so that they don't have to pay as many real artists. Oh. They can like pay them, not pay them. I mean, they would in theory then be paying themselves.
Yes, but wow, that's pretty fucked up.
But what's interesting is that they've gotten away with it.
Yes.
Because the way in which people now listen to music, or so many people listen to music, is not a sit down, listen song for song. It's just background.
Yeah.
And it just shows you that the consumption of music has drastically changed.
Yeah.
There was a great comedian who made a comment about a conversation they had with a young kid, which was like, so what kind of music are you into?
Yeah.
And they were like, you know, chill house. And it was like, what the fuck's that? Like, what artists? And the guy was like, I don't know, I just listened to that playlist.
Whatever's on the playlist, yeah.
And it's like,
it's because that whole, the whole like ritual of going to buy the CD and unpacking the CD and taking out the little leaflet and putting it in your CD player.
And then you only have that in your car.
Yes.
You know, you didn't have a mix.
Exactly.
It didn't have that infinitive shuffle
where
it just played forever. You then got to the end of the CD and you had to start it again.
Yeah.
I'll never forget a moment with a dude behind the counter of a CD store getting frustrated with me for asking to listen to too many albums.
Oh.
I'll never forget his face going like, are you going to buy something? And I'm like, I need to listen to it first.
I need to know if it's good if I'm going to spend my money.
Yeah, fuck, how else am I meant to hear what this thing sounds like?
Yeah.
It just didn't exist as a possibility.
Yes.
I had to sit and listen. Wow, dude.
Fascinating. The times just, they have changed.
Yeah, shit. Should we get into movies?
Yes.
Okay. Let's talk about A Complete Unknown.
Let's do that.
All right. So this is James Mangold, who brought us Walk the Line, the very famous and celebrated Johnny Cash biopic.
Yeah.
And now this is his go at a very specific time in the life of Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
And I think it's perhaps worth mentioning at this point, biopics could be the whole career and the whole story.
Yes.
Or they could be a very specific time in an artist's life.
Yeah.
And I think those ones are generally stand to be better.
Yeah, I agree.
And so this is the start of Bob Dylan's career up until 1965, around there, where a very famous point happened in his career where Dylan went electric.
Yes.
Which I think is a lovely thing to discuss, because that was such an important moment in at least the history of Bob Dylan, which is wild to think about.
Strange.
But this stars old Timothy Chalamet as Bob Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
It was many years in the making. There were some lovely clips out there of him playing his guitar on set of Dune.
Oh, right.
Because I think he was meant to do it before.
Oh. Okay.
So he's been in preparation for many, many years.
Okay.
He's certainly, I think, in the race for Oscars.
Yeah, he'll probably get a nom.
He'll get a nomination. And so, this is the story of Bob Dylan.
Hmm.
What did you think of it, G-Force?
I actually liked it quite a lot. As someone who, I don't know anything about Bob Dylan. Like, I know a few of his songs.
I know
songs.
A couple of surface stuff.
Exactly. But something I like about it, and I kind of like respect this take, is at no point did I feel like it was trying to convince me to like him.
Yes.
He's kind of an arsehole.
Yes. And I think the fact that you say you don't really know Bob Dylan is interesting. I don't think anyone really knows Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
And I think what this film has done is exposed the fact that a lot of him is a character.
Mm.
But I mean, a lot of people are characters.
Yes.
Reginald Dwight became Elton John.
Yes.
You know, we see this all the time. That's not their real names.
Mm.
But Bob Dylan, I think, got shrouded in a lot of mystery and misconception and stories and magic, because it was in and around this world of folk and a lot of poetry and politics.
Yeah.
But you get the sense that it was a very contrived idea.
Yes.
And the film even points to that.
Yeah.
Where he even makes a comment. You know, you got to be interesting. You got to be.
Mm.
You got to make that stuff up.
Yeah.
In so many words, he said that.
Yeah.
I found it very interesting, and I think it's worth mentioning that Mangold got the blessing of Bob Dylan.
Yes.
And apparently so much so that the final version of the script, they actually read it together.
Mm. Yes.
With Bob Dylan himself, yeah, reading his parts as Bob Dylan.
Oh, okay.
And apparently it signed off. Yeah. Literally said, go with God.
Okay.
And signed the last sort of copy of the script.
Yeah, I read somewhere that James Mangold still has a script that Bob Dylan wrote a bunch of notes on.
Mm.
So it's got like notes that Bob Dylan wrote like all throughout the script.
Very interesting.
That's cool.
But yeah, so it's interesting that he even condoned this version that actually doesn't paint him in the nicest light.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a funny thing. I think myself as a musician, I've had the chance to sort of glimpse down the path,
yes,
that one takes and what one does and the life that you lead.
Mm.
And I think there's a huge miss. What people think that life is and what it really is are sort of two very different things.
Yeah.
And I think your general public has this grand idea and this poetry and this mysticism of these characters. And I think when you're really living it day to day, it's another story.
Yes.
You know, people think that, you know, you're this genius savant. But it's funny because from my little experience, and I do stress the fact that it's little, I thought our sort of 5 or 6 albums that we've put out were very impressive.
Mm.
Bob Dylan has done as many as 55, which is fucking insane. But I got the sense of, sure, some level of talent and nuance comes into songwriting, but it's very much a muscle.
Yeah.
And of course, some people can work and create bigger muscles than others.
Yes.
So some bodies are able to literally create bigger muscles.
Mm.
If you have bigger pecs, for example, bench pressing will make my chest bigger than yours.
Yeah.
But it's ultimately a gym. And the harder you work, the more these things come to you.
Mm.
And you even have someone like Chris Martin from Coldplay say, these songs just come down.
Yeah.
They just arrive. And it's a little bit like a very famous quote a golfer said, which is, the harder I practice, the luckier I get.
Yes.
So it's all in that kind of world. And so, this movie still plays a little bit into the mysticism of Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it does expose a little bit of how much of him is contrived, which I think is kind of interesting.
It feels more honest than sometimes these kind of movies feel. Just because it's allowed to be kind of negative at times. I was going to make a point and I completely forgot what it was.
Sorry, I went on a whole bunch of...
It was like related to what you were saying and then I instantly forgot what it was. That's ADHD brain. But I like the way it treats its songs because it treats them almost the same way like a musical would.
Yeah.
Like jukebox musical style where the songs are used to tell the story and inform us about the characters.
Yeah.
Like the movie doesn't tell us a huge amount about Bob Dylan, like as a person.
Yeah.
It does it mostly through the music. It exposes him through the music that he writes.
I gave it a like good rating in my head. And then, because we watched it relatively early in the day, I then went and put on a Bob Dylan album and I was like, it's now got another star in my head because it actually changed my day.
Right.
It had me want to go over to YouTube and find out more about the making and Bob Dylan and just let that algorithm sort of open up the Bob Dylan stuff.
Right.
They put the most incredible sense of attention into his apartment.
Oh, okay.
And every little thing was you know, obviously that is the way films work, where every little thing is a decision.
Yeah.
But it just really seemed like they did that well.
Nice.
And his relationships with women
was
very interesting. And how Elle Fanning's character represented a particular person, but yes, other people at the same time.
Yeah, because they changed her name. Because Bob Dylan was like, I think that was on Bob Dylan's assistance, because she was someone who's not like famous.
Yeah.
All the other, most of the other like people that we come across in these movies have like...
Yeah, like Joan Baez was a very famous musician. Yeah.
And Johnny Cash. Yeah. These are people who have like, they're in the public spotlight.
Yeah.
Where she's a private, she's not like a celebrity. Yeah. So he was like, we can keep her out of this.
He asked for her name to be changed. Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah.
No, but it is a good movie. And it's nice to think about this individual because I think this I don't think we've thought about Bob Dylan for a while.
Yeah. I think Timothy Chalamet might be a better singer than Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
Which is bizarre.
Dylan was never famously a great singer, yes, but it was such a unique sound.
It was kind of part of his appeal was the fact that he wasn't a great singer.
Yeah.
He was very like ordinary.
Yeah.
But the cast is like the rest of the cast is great. Edward Norton's really good.
Yeah, he was.
That was originally supposed to be Benedict Cumberbatch.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know what happened there, I suppose, because of the delay.
Maybe.
And like we all pointed out afterwards, at least Cole and I were talking about it, like Boyd Holbrook is completely unrecognizable in this movie. He's Johnny Cash.
Yes.
But he's
yes.
he's in like almost everything James Mangold has done over the last few years.
Mm.
He's in Logan, he's in Dial of Destiny. He's in a
more blonde individual in real life. So you don't quite see him.
He's blonde and he usually has facial hair.
Yeah.
So now seeing him like clean shaven with like the swept back black hair.
Yeah.
He's completely unrecognizable and he's great. I thought he was really good in this.
Yeah.
It's like as Johnny Cash. Like Cole said to me, there's a moment when we see Johnny Cash playing for the first time.
Yes.
And he like holds his gun out like a guitar,
like a gun. Yeah.
And Cole's like, this is the coolest man who's ever lived.
Yeah.
Like, why can't we just have like a little bit of his cool?
Yeah. Yeah. No, like, I thought the exact same thing.
What a ledge.
But so what happened in the movie, and it's the build up. The film is very much the build up to this, which is a very famous a very famous folk festival called the Newport Folk Festival, where he was set to close.
Yeah.
And his latest album and the music that he'd been making had been more electric.
Yeah.
So this is the start of rock and roll becoming a popular genre, which was, you know, this kind of louder, dirtier, more dangerous.
Yeah.
Kind of version of the folk guitar that one knew, and there was the pressure was on to sort of to get him to abide by the rules of this folk festival and to play what everyone expected him to do. And very famously, he went electric, and it wasn't this obvious like, oh my god, we love this, this is awesome.
Exactly.
It was people booing him, and it was this big moment where he sort of upset, but then later ushered in this incredible new chapter in his career. I thought it'd be very interesting to point out, and it'll be a little bit of a segue into another film that I watched this weekend, which is a documentary on Netflix about Avicii called I Am Tim.
Okay.
Do you know about this?
No.
So Netflix came out with two products for Avicii, a documentary called I Am Tim and Avicii My Last Show, which is more of a concert film, which is shorter. This is the story of the Swedish DJ Avicii, who I knew fucking nothing about. And I find it very interesting that he made his name as this dance DJ.
Yes.
Which is very much him working at a laptop.
Yeah.
And he was on the cusp of new material, making new material, which was exciting him.
Right.
Which involved other musicians and collaborating with other musicians and playing this kind of guitar sort of country music.
Oh, okay.
Which you'll know as the basis of these very, very, very famous songs.
Right.
But he performed a very special set at Ultra, which is that sort of dance festival that now travels the world.
Okay.
And we know it because it comes to South Africa
sort
of once a year. I think it originated in Miami, and its kind of main center was this Ultra Miami.
Right.
The documentary shows them debuting this new material.
Right.
Three or four of these songs, which are going to become the biggest songs in the world, but they were booed.
Right.
Because at the time, he chose to present them acoustically.
Okay.
So on this big stage, you know, which usually has pyro and lights,
yes.
he had these musicians sort of play.
Right.
And these dance EDM audience was like, what? And they booed him.
Wild.
And it like didn't go well.
Yes.
And I just find it so interesting that even in this modern era where a musician wants to push a boundary
yes.
or try something new or go in an exciting new direction that they're excited about, mm. that you could still have these performances where people boo.
Yeah.
But they were booing songs that, you know, like that Wake Me Up Before I Go.
Oh, yes.
And I'm wiser and I'm older. These are fucking famous songs.
Yeah.
Like they are later going to go wild. Like they are going to kick themselves for yes. having booed the very first performance of these songs.
Right.
It's wild. So I just love the fact that these two concerts.
Yes.
You know, this 1965 Newport Folk Festival and Avicii's Miami Ultra performance are kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
It's wild. And then I didn't know this just because it was I was under a certain rock. the third act of the Avicii film is quite significant. He dies. I didn't know he passed away.
Okay. I do vaguely remember that.
I sort of, once that happens in the documentary, I'm like, oh, shit.
Yes.
I forgot about this.
Yeah.
So it does change things, but it was kind of wild for me to go into the Avicii documentary not right. knowing, like, the main reason why this documentary exists.
Yes.
But yeah, it was interesting to watch.
Okay. Interesting.
So, yeah. Cool.
History repeats itself.
Yeah. No, very interesting. Yeah. Should we move on to TV?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so I want to tell you about a very cool limited series that I watched on Netflix called The Madness.
Okay.
Okay, this is Colman Domingo.
Ooh.
Who is fucking talented.
Yes.
He is my number one for best actor
yeah.
this year in the award season. The movie Sing Sing, we've spoken about at length.
Yeah.
I really think he deserves it. But this is a really smart, let's call it a kick the hornet's nest story.
Okay.
Which, do you know what I mean by that?
I think so.
Yeah, where sort of like something kind of kicks off in the beginning and it sort of unravels a much bigger
yes.
hornet's nest that our one main individual has to work his way through.
Mm.
So basically he is a somewhat of a television personality on CNN.
Okay.
With a certain level of politics that people come to know him for, probably nice. Advocating for some level of racial justice and yeah. equality. And he goes away to the Poconos,
right.
which is the mountain sort of foresty area.
Yes.
Which he's got such a cool voice, by the way.
Colman right.
Domingo. So yes. He calls it Poconos. Poconos. and he's in this kind of like forest cabin. He meets his neighbor, who's this kind of suave, kind of creepy looking white guy.
Right.
Basically, the guy says, if you need anything, just shout. And then the power goes out.
Hmm.
And so he goes over to his neighbor because he's run out of petrol.
Right.
And when he's standing in the sort of driveway of this thing, he looks to the sort of sauna, which is this little sauna room to the left, and he sees his neighbor cut up in pieces.
Right.
And then he gets shot at and he has to run away.
Right.
It is then discovered, I'm trying to make sure I don't give too much away, but it's then discovered that who that neighbor was is a significant dude in the pro-white, what are they called?
Oh, like white nationalist.
White supremacist.
Okay.
He's like a leader in the white supremacist groups.
Right.
And everything starts getting stacked up against him because now they could potentially pin this murder on him.
Yes.
So it's very interesting.
Okay.
The madness. And of course it goes in all sorts of shapes and forms, but it's basically him on the run.
Okay.
For about 8 episodes. But it's smart. It's cool. I enjoyed it.
Nice. You had me at Colman Domingo.
Oh, good. another one I really enjoyed, which we finished this last weekend, is No Good Deed.
Okay.
Which is also a limited series on Netflix. This stars Lisa Kudrow.
All right.
Who we know as Phoebe from Friends.
Yes.
Along with Ray Romano, who we know from Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yes.
They are a mom and a pops that live in this beautiful house in Los Feliz.
Okay.
Which is in LA. And they are looking to sell this house.
Right.
And the series is basically about something happened in the house.
Right.
I don't want to also give too much away, but the basic premise is that the son died in the house, but you don't know how or why, but there's a certain level of mystery around it.
Okay.
And as they try and sell their house, there's about three or four different groups of people that are trying to bid for the house.
Right.
And through that, we get a lovely kind of ensemble.
Cool.
And it's an unraveler where you discover what happens, how other people are involved, how people get involved.
Okay.
And it's a little bit of like, which sometimes I don't enjoy, which is the like everything goes wrong.
Yes.
And it compounds.
Yeah.
But it's not too frustrating in that sense.
Okay.
There's quite a cool role played by Dennis Leary.
Oh.
Which you haven't sort of seen much of.
Yeah.
He plays Ray's brother, Ray Romano's brother. But yeah, it's cool.
Nice.
Yeah, so that is called No Good Deed.
Cool.
It's got Luke Wilson in it.
All right.
He's very good at being like a bit of a stupid dude.
Yes.
Which I enjoy. And then there's the woman who was in Freaks and Geeks, and she's been in a bunch of stuff, like Christina Milioto.
Okay.
I forget her name.
All right.
I'd love to actually get her name right.
Freaks.
Have you watched any good TV?
I'm not watching much. I'm still just watching Skeleton Crew as it comes out.
Okay, how's that developing?
So fun, dude. What a great little show.
Hey.
It is such a little blast. Such a good show. It's like if you have kids and you want your kids to like Star Wars.
Oh, sorry. Her name is Linda Cardellini.
Oh, I love Linda Cardellini. She's great, dude.
She's very cool. And she plays a very sort of like done up LA, you know, tits sort of pushed up by the bra and lots of makeup. And she sort of makes jokes about being 33, but you know she's not. No, she's cool. And she's sort of a little bit of a con person throughout the show. You never quite believe her.
Yes.
You don't quite know what's going on in her life.
I think a lot of people our age will know her as Velma.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
In the Scooby-Doo movies.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Okay, but over on back to Star Wars.
Yes.
Skeleton Crew, you loving?
Is it so much fun, dude.
Is it finished?
Do you have the whole thing? I think there's one or two left.
Are you getting episode by episode?
Yeah, it's coming week to week.
Okay.
Which I must say, shows should be.
Exactly. I still appreciate that because I think otherwise I think a limited series could maybe come in one package because often they're very binge-worthy stories. Often they're these kind of crime dramas.
Yes.
But some of the more adventure stuff,
more
playful stuff, it's quite nice to get them spread out.
Also just keeps people talking about it, like keeps it in the public consciousness.
Mm.
You know, every time like Netflix drops like Stranger Things or something, they'll bring it out on a Friday and by Monday everyone's forgotten about it because everyone watched it over the weekend and now it's gone forever.
Yeah, it's that,
you know,
that McDonald's burger that just gets munched and then 10 minutes later feel awful. We've finished a few seasons now of stuff. Shrinking came to a lovely end.
Cool.
It's such a beautiful show.
I need to get Apple TV.
Yeah, I reckon Apple TV, we've spoken about this, is your best bang for buck.
Mm.
Like, I think there's such good stuff on Apple TV.
Yeah.
Plus, but yeah, Shrinking, I mean, if you're the kind of person sort of similar to me, like the theme song is written by the singer of Death Cab for Cutie, Benjamin Gibbard.
It's okay. Like,
it's just so beautiful. And it's another one of those really good Brett Goldstein shows.
Right.
Where the same thing happened to him as it did with Ted Lasso. He's a writer.
Yes.
But he ends up writing himself into these TV shows.
Right.
So he very famously wasn't going to be Roy Kent in Ted Lasso, but wrote this character so convincingly that eventually he was like, I can do this. Let me give you a try.
Cool.
And he sort of gave it a go and everyone was like, fuck, you are Roy Kent. And so he's written himself into Shrinking in a very interesting way.
Okay.
And he plays this lovely role in this latest season. And old Jason Segel is the sort of the main character of the show. And you're really grappling with the fact that his wife died.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of the show. He's a psychologist, and before the show starts, his wife got killed in a kind of a hit and run.
Right.
And it's about him and his daughter really sort of going through life. But it's the same guy behind Scrubs.
Mm-hmm.
So Bill Lawrence. So they very much understand the idea of the kooky character, the lovable character, the bromance, the friendships, the sisterhoods.
Nice.
And they've got this beautiful dialogue between them that you kind of wish, you're a little bit jealous that you don't have that in your real life.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sort of the kooky games. And it's like, I don't know whether you felt that, like the relationship between Donald Faison and our main character in Scrubs.
Yes.
What are them? JD and Turk.
Yes.
You were sort of not jealous, but you sort of loved their friendship, and you wished your friendship could be like theirs.
Yes.
That was what I think the essence of Scrubs was.
Yeah.
Like, I want people like that.
Exactly.
And so Bill Lawrence is very good at doing that in Shrinking. And there's just this quirky, and there's actually a few characters from Scrubs that are in it.
Oh, cool. 'Cause
he tends to work with the same people.
Nice.
So I highly recommend Shrinking.
Okay.
I really, and I've spoken about it at length on the show, but
yeah.
it really is special. And it's one of those shows that just tick all the boxes very effortlessly.
Okay.
Where you are laughing, but then it can pull the rug out.
Okay,
just cool. Like Scrubs did. Where all of a sudden you're like, fuck, this is dark.
Yeah.
And this is deep.
Okay.
I must say, No Good Deed, just to jump back to the Netflix limited series now that I was talking about with Lisa Kudrow and Ray Romano, they also kind of inject quite a lot of heartfelt sentimentality in amongst this kind of kooky,
nice,
everything going wrong show. No, so it is good.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, those are the highlights for me.
Yeah.
We are going into a weekend of sold-out screenings with Nosferatu.
Sick, yes.
At the Bioscope in the week that this episode's coming out. So that'll be a cool thing to talk about next week.
Okay.
There is going to be a media screening for us of A Real Pain.
Oh, yes.
Which is the Kieran Culkin, Jesse Eisenberg.
It looks really good. Yeah.
Which has been out in the rest of the world for a bit now, but is coming to cinemas and the Bioscope in 2 weeks' time.
Sick.
So it'll be cool to watch that.
Nice.
Yeah, and then Better Man is getting a advanced screening this coming Saturday.
Oh, cool.
At the Bioscope, because it's interesting, and I want to chat about this for a little. When I heard about the fact that Better Man was now going to be released in South Africa, I was very excited to see that it was timed around the weekend that we know Robbie Williams is going to be in South Africa, in Joburg.
Yeah.
So I still wonder whether anything is planned.
Yeah.
This is next weekend. But then it's so funny where you see this great idea, which is like, we should release the film then.
Yeah.
Because that's when the concerts are.
Yes.
And it's timed perfectly. And then you go, no, wait, hold on. Actually, it's not timed perfectly.
Yeah.
Because if you are a diehard Robbie Williams fan in Joburg, you're probably going to the show.
Exactly.
You're probably not going to watch the film. So then all of a sudden, the distributors were like, you're allowed to do a screening a week ahead.
Okay, cool.
So that people could watch them ahead of the shows.
Okay.
So we're doing a screening this coming Saturday.
Nice. Okay, sick.
For those who don't know what we're talking about, Better Man is this biopic about Robbie Williams.
Yeah.
That was made by Michael Gracie, who is the director of Greatest Showman and a bunch of other stuff. So this man knows how to make a musical.
Yeah.
And they obviously wanted to tell the story of Robbie Williams' life, which for those who know, you know him and you know his history and you know how famous this dude is.
Yeah.
Very interestingly, not famous in other parts of the world. Like never quite ever made it to the Americas.
Yeah.
And we kind of lost Robbie Williams at one point.
Mm.
He sort of fell off the map in the way in which pop stars sometimes do.
Yeah.
But he came back in a way when this Netflix docuseries about him sort of put him back into consciousness. And now this movie's come out where they are telling the story of his life.
Mm.
But he is still very much a alive, active person.
Yeah.
So how do you tell the story? Mm. And the gimmick or the sort of main swing, is the fact that the character of Robbie Williams is played by a monkey.
Yeah.
Which is so bizarre and so wild, and it's playing on this idea that he sees himself as a less evolved human,
yes.
That life got wild. And so it's this lovely device for him to tell a story, but it's not about casting someone that looks like him.
Yes.
Which is often what the biopic sort of falls into, yeah. The trap of, especially when the person's still alive.
Mm.
And so it's a big wild swing.
Yeah.
But it seems like a great, fun idea.
Yeah.
But you're caught, much like the planning of the screenings of Better Man in Joburg.
Yes.
You're caught in this funny little conundrum, which is, would fans of Robbie Williams go out and watch this strange movie about him?
Exactly.
And people who go out and watch somewhat strange big swings of a movie, are they fans of Robbie Williams?
Mm.
So I think that's the most interesting thing. And you also pointed out something about territories. We were chatting earlier when we were having a coffee, that the big film-watching territory in the world is America.
It's America and it's China.
America and China.
Those are the two big, big, big ones.
That's where you get the majority of your profit back.
Yeah, exactly.
And so if you're not famous in America...
you're going to struggle.
And they don't even know Robbie Williams, let alone why... Robbie Williams is a monkey.
Yes.
So it's an interesting swing.
Yeah.
And so it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah.
But it looks to be a good movie in essence, but it might be a little bit lost. We learned this kind of interesting, the crossover crisis or crossover conundrum quite early on in the bioscope, because we opened during the World Cup in South Africa.
Okay, yes.
So the bioscope opened in June 2010.
Right.
Right as the World Cup was happening.
Yes.
And we naturally got these inquiries and worked with these people to make or to screen soccer-related films.
Right.
That was the natural thing. And we thought, this is a great idea because it's the World Cup.
Mm.
And one person once, and so this is like as we started, someone involved even made some comment nonchalantly. They were like, you know, this isn't going to work, right? And I was like, what? And I'm like, how on earth could it not work? And they were like, people who love soccer don't go to cinemas and watch documentaries.
Yes.
And people who go to cinemas to watch documentaries don't necessarily like soccer.
Yeah.
So this isn't going to work. And I was like, oh, fuck. But very early on, I felt that.
Yes.
And you got to recognize that. You often don't see it. It often presents itself after the fact. But that was the feeling with Bike Riders.
Okay.
The great film.
Yeah.
It's this beautiful kind of art house product where it's this kind of slow burn character drama about a bike gang.
Yeah.
And the people who watch art house films don't ride motorbikes necessarily. I mean, I'm generalizing, but you know what I mean? They don't go on a breakfast run on a Sunday morning.
Yes.
So they might not know to watch this movie
because
they don't think it's for them because it looks like a film for sort of bikers, but it's actually for them.
Yes, exactly.
And then the bikers are out doing breakfast runs in Heart of Beersport.
Yes.
They're not going to come to an art house cinema and watch, a slow burn character drama.
No.
So the bike riders got lost.
Yes,
but it's a beautiful, amazing movie.
It's a good movie. Yeah.
Anyways, interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see how that turns out.
It's getting very well reviewed. Better Man. It's like it's mostly been very well received.
Yeah.
So hopefully, like a positive response to it can give a little bit of a kick up the butt.
Yeah, because I think it was meant to have released now, round about now in the rest of the world, and some of the reports are coming back that it's not doing as well.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate. But,
yes.
You also have to remember that historically a lot of these movies, a lot of great movies didn't work in cinemas.
Yeah.
And they only found their real audience later.
Or even like movies in theaters, like The Greatest Showman didn't open strong. But what they did is they just left it in theaters for quite a long time. It had quite a long theatrical run.
Yeah, that's
and people just left it. And because it like built a bit of a reputation, it kind of gained more later in its like screening life than it did early on.
Yeah,
the whole idea of like movies living and dying on their opening weekend is like so pointless to me.
Yeah, and that's a funny game that I'm now more conscious of since we've been doing these kind of bigger films, with our upgrade at the Bioscope. I do wonder that a little too much is put on that opening weekend. Yeah. I don't think we watch movies in the same way anymore.
Yes.
There's very few that you sort of go, I have to watch this.
Yeah.
As soon as it comes out.
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting. Eh?
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you, my G-Force.
Yeah.
It was lovely chatting to you.
It was a nice one.
Yeah, it was lekker. And thank you, everyone. Our home base is thevideostore.co.za.
Yep.
You can see links to some previous guest chats that we have over there, but there's also links to all the social media. So let us know whether there's a nice "Hey, did you guys see" from your side.
Yeah.
You are also welcome to send us voice notes of you returning stuff for the films that you or the TV shows that you have watched. We'd love to hear from you. So always know that that's available as an option.
Yeah.
But otherwise, let us know what we've chatted about.
Yeah.
What you think about what we have chatted about. And we'll see you guys again next week.
Yes.
All right. Lekker.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.